Well, John Sheska and Mac Barnett's new book is Battle Bunny. The book takes a simple story and rewrites it to turn a bunny celebrating a birthday into a bunny taking on the world as well. Battle Bunny. John Sheska is the author of The Stinky Cheese Man and Other Fairly Stupid Tales, a book that one critic said changed the industry landscape back in the 1990s. He was appointed the first National Ambassador for Young People's Literature in 2008 by the Library of Congress. Before that, he was a professional children's book author. Before he was an author, he was a second grade teacher, a carpenter, and a painter. And John, such a pleasure. Thanks for coming in.
Wow, glad to be here. That's quite the intro.
That's quite the intro.
I'm kind of tired just doing all that.
That makes two of us, buddy.
Okay.
Mac Barnett is regarded as a budding superstar in children's fiction. His first book, Billy Twitters and His Blue Whale Problem, was written when he was still in college. His book, Extra Yarn, won the 2013 Caldecott Medal. And Mac, so good to have you, too. Welcome.
Oh, thank you. Thanks so much.
Well, this book, Battle Bunny, a purposefully defaced children's book. Guys, where did you two meet, and how did you come up with the idea for a book exactly like this, John?
Well, actually, we prefer enhanced books.
Enhanced books.
I mean, some people might think it's defaced. It's just altered slightly.
Fixed.
Yeah, improved. There's plenty of words. No, it's the weirdest thing. I met Mac because he and my daughter went to school together out in California.
And John was the reason I wanted to write picture books. The Stinky Cheese Man I read in college and said, like, this is totally...
This is my world.
Bold, experimental. Yeah. This is the kind of stuff I want to write.
Yeah.
And so we were on tour together. It was my first tour, and John's probably millionth. And
millionth two, actually.
Yeah.
Point two.
So to entertain ourselves in the back of a car, we bought a copy of a book about a cat, a very sweet book. And we got out our signing Sharpies, and...
Just
lasers coming out of the cat's eyes.
Yeah. We just kind of channeled what we used to do as fifth graders.
It enhanced it.
It came so naturally.
And that's what we realized, is this was just like the great stories we had made as kids and that kids come up and show us whenever we're going into schools and seeing them.
I was
going
to say, there's a video promoting this new book where you have some kid and you're asking the kid about the sweet little story.
Yeah.
How would you change the story? And the kid's like, yeah, I want to tear it apart. I want the bunny to have... lasers and kill people.
That little guy was so perfect,
cute
too.
Cute kid.
Because
yeah.
We just tell him the real birthday bunny story, which is that sappy story that every kid's heard a million times.
Yeah.
No one remembers the bunny's birthday. There's a surprise party.
And surprise parties are the least surprising things in picture books. There's no
way to
ruin a surprise than with a surprise party.
And so when we tell the kid the story, he just goes like, oh, no, that's terrible. There should be ninjas and explosions.
And that's what you brought in this
that's
book.
Right.
And cake destruction.
And cake. Well, you did a little cake destruction in the video. You're both sticking cake all over
did.
Your faces.
Yeah.
We bought a huge
cake.
The kid could
face.
Not believe that we just face first dove into that cake.
And John, just so I'm being real clear, you were the guy appointed the first National Ambassador for Young People's
I know
Literature,
it doesn't
right?
seem
I mean,
like it, yes.
Yeah, I'm wondering now.
No, I have diplomatic immunity. That's actually why I can do all this stuff. And I bring along Mac as my vice ambassador.
Well, Mac, what was it about kids' books that got you started actually doing your first one when you were in school yourself?
Well, I was studying with a writer at Pomona College named David Foster Wallace, who,
sure.
That's the kind of stuff I was thinking of writing.
The Wallace family, right?
Is that the
same family or not?
He's not part of the Wallace family.
Okay.
But he did Infinite Jest and you know, that book that's about 1,100 pages long. And I love that book. I loved everything he did.
And a writer I love, too.
Yeah, so that was the kind of stuff I was thinking of doing.
Thank God you didn't go there, it sounds like.
Well, and then I read John's book and I realized that kind of really, really great experimental fiction, you could do that for kids. And in fact, with text and image together in picture books, there were all kinds of frontiers and experiments and things to do in picture books that people hadn't done before. And just to connect with this audience of kids who are the best story readers, it was that moment where I said, like, this is my audience. This is the kind of stuff I want to do and the people I want to write for.
A lot more instant gratification and all that kind of thing seemed to matter, I'm guessing.
I think that's right, yeah. And I think that kids are kind of more willing to make that literary bargain to read a strange story or a weird story and to get a kind of different pleasure from it than a traditional, that same old birthday party, surprise party story.
Yeah, and that was my experience teaching second grade. I told my second graders Kafka stories. I tell them the Metamorphosis. There's a kid, a guy who wakes up and he's a bug in the morning. And the second graders would go, really?
Really?
Yeah. That could happen. Yeah, yeah. That could really happen.
Gogol's the nose is another good one for the little guys.
And Mac and I realized that's it.
Their minds will go anywhere at that point, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. I mean, if you look at like any kind of experimental fiction is setting up kind of new rules for fiction. That's the experience of being a kid. You know, childhood is experimental. So learning the new rules to a book is the same thing as learning the new rules at a dinner party.
You know, for listeners who may not recall The Stinky Cheese Man, I went through it again last night. And, you know.
Why are you shaking your head like that?
I'm an ambassador. I was laughing, and you were messing with my head.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell us what you did. And I laughed out loud. What you did with the old fairy tale, The Princess and the Pea. Because you take it and you
twist it. Well, it was just one small change.
Yes.
The P is now a bowling ball, and that changes everything.
Yeah. How did it change things?
Well, now it's kind of obvious that the princess is going to feel it, and she'll get married to the prince. And they'll all live happily, if not completely honestly, ever after.
They kind of have to hide some things from the parents, right?
just to sort of engineer that whole happy
ending.
Which
is real life. Sometimes you got to do that. Sometimes you got to hide some things from the parents.
Complete happy life.
And you also did one with the whole Ugly Duckling story.
Well, that's one, favorite. I think that's one that's probably why the manuscript got rejected for about a year when I first tried to sell it. Because can you imagine an editor sitting in his room going, okay, the really ugly duckling grows up to be... Oh, a really ugly
duckling.
The end. It looks so much funnier with the illustration. Then it's a really big ugly duck, but it's still just as sad.
Yeah, yeah. But how many copies of that book have you sold?
About a bazillion. And it's in 12 different languages. No, like honestly, like 3 million or so. And it was the greatest kind of confirmation that I knew kids would love this. I knew kid would get this. In the same way that Mac and I, when we landed on this idea to mess around with a book and completely change it, we just suddenly knew, like, oh, man, every kid will love to do this. And it will give them permission to do Battle Bunny.
Yeah, kids have been doing that. So we make that original sappy Birthday Bunny story that we wrote first. That's available for free on the website on mybirthdaybunny.com. And you can go and just download it, print it out, and change it. And kids have already been doing it.
You mess your own.
Ghost Bunny.
Pirate Bunny.
Costume Bunny.
Robot Bunny.
Princess Bunny.
Oh, Costume Bunny was the best. This little girl, like, it's not all mayhem and blowing stuff up. She dresses everyone in these beautiful dresses. There's paparazzi. There's news helicopters.
Yeah.
She got every detail.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, I should point out that John Cheska and Mac Barnett will talk about Battle Bunny this evening at 6:30 at the Reading Reptile, that great store at 328 West 63rd Street in Brookside. If you want a ticket, call 816-753-0441. You can also get more information there. We'll put that number up on our website, kcur.org. Again, 816-753-0441 at the Reading Reptile.
Oh, so, you know what? This is actually going to be even more than a presentation. This is going to be a birthday party.
Yeah, birthday bash.
They've got the whole store set up for a birthday bunny birthday party.
And it sounds like
everyone who comes gets either a present or a bomb. It's kind of up to the bunny.
It's going to be a whole lot of stuff going on.
This is one of the best stores in the entire country.
It is.
And it's why we came here.
And
it is really amazing.
A lot of us are very proud of that store.
Oh,
here
you
in
should
Kansas
be.
City. Yeah. Well, are you worried, Mac, that you're going to have a bunch of kids who look at Battle Bunny and then decide to go out and start marking up their own books?
Oh, I hope so. I mean, you know.
That's the wrong answer, Mac.
Yeah, no, that's the right answer.
If you own the book and you want to, I mean, that's your right. You know, of course, you shouldn't be marking in a library book, but I mark up all my books. You know, Coleridge marks up all his books, and we revere it and read his marginalia, but we don't let kids do that. You know, I actually wrote my first picture book in the margins of the book I was reading at the time. I was going to and from work on the subway, and I'd have ideas and scribble it on the margins. So Billy Twitters is written in another book.
Yeah. And we love that the librarians have caught on to this, and they realized, you know, all those books were thrown away? Let's save them and give them to kids. Those books in a yard sale, let's save them and let kids improve them.
Oh, that's interesting.
And we love telling people, you know, it's not unlike Marcel Duchamp putting his mustache on the Mona Lisa or Dali doing the same thing. See, we're elevating the whole thing. We're not criminals.
Yeah. Well, did you think parents, John, from watching parents for so many years, are they too careful with their kids? I mean, they think of their second graders. They want them to like The Princess and the Pea the way it was originally written. They don't want them having subversive thoughts about different ways to cast a classic story.
Well, there's definitely some of that in children's books in general, too. And that's why Mac and I get along so well, because we realize kids are really sophisticated thinkers in a lot of ways. They're capable of thinking of these kind of things, and they love subversion.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I think we're reflecting what's in their brains and reflecting their emotional experiences. We're not introducing them to these
things. And they recognize that. They see the Stinky Cheese Man. They see Battle Bunny. And then they come up to us and say, are you guys like us? Can you do this?
Yeah.
And we say yes.
Well, if you want to join our conversation with John Sheska and Mac Barnett, our phone number here, 816-235-2888. Again, 816-235-2888. Or drop us a line at updatedate@kcur.org. You can also tweet us at @KCURUpToDate. So what's the state of children's literature these days? What do you see happening out there, Mac? What's the state of play?
Well, you know, I love picture books particularly, and I think even in the last 5 years, there's been a real crop of very interesting, sophisticated, beautifully done picture books, which is good. I mean, I'm really happy that we're on talking about this. I think picture books used to be a really big part of kind of literary culture, and they were in there. You'd see reviews in Harper's and New Yorker on the radio, everything.
Even for kids, you're talking about who are teenagers or even adults.
That's
now,
right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that they deserve that place now, but they've kind of been shunted off to the side. And some of that is our fault. There's been maybe times where the ratio of bad to good or less interesting to more interesting is off. But there's great stuff coming out right now. I think it's an exciting time.
You know, John, you just had a commentary on NPR where you sort of talked about this idea of celebrities, more and more celebrities across the country sort of getting into the kids' book genre.
Yeah.
What did you have to say about that?
Well, I tried to be political and polite, but a lot of those books really are not good. And the publishers are printing them because they know they can sell a bunch of them right off, just because people know. They say, oh, I love Billy Crystal, or I love Robin Williams.
Mm-hmm.
But then they're not picture book writers. This mm-hmm. is an art. There's really an art to writing a picture book.
And so what, these folks shouldn't be doing it, or what are you saying?
No, they can do it. I mean, that's fine. But I would hope that they don't push out great books. And I worry that they suck up the resources from a publisher and maybe not give a chance to somebody who's really connected with kids.
Is there one celebrity book? I mean, because we're talking about a celebrity here, is there one that just made you wince and want to go and step all over it, or what? As a matter, I can tell by your eyes the answer is yes, John.
No, there's actually so many.
Yeah.
It's kind of terrible. There could be an entire section. Because the opposite is actually true. Like, you could probably make a little section of the celebrity books that are kind of okay.
You know who has a good one, a couple, is Fred Gwynn.
Yeah.
Who was Herman Munster.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, the
well,
king
he does a lot
reigned.
Of puns.
Yeah, and he illustrates
Jamie Lee
them.
Curtis. Yep. Like, hers are pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Well, she's been kind of done some neat stuff with her post-Hollywood
and she's connected
life,
with kids,
you know?
Too. Yeah. Because that's the thing. Though we also see books that I always tell people, go read to an audience of kids. Like, don't do this in a vacuum. Because mm-hmm. these books are read aloud, and they live being read aloud by parents or by teachers or by us.
Yeah.
You know, I bet there's a huge tendency among so many people to look at the work that you guys do. And because it's a, quote, kid's book, they sit back and think, oh, that's easy.
Yeah.
Nothing to it, Mac. I could do that in 10 minutes tonight in my free time before I go to bed, and I can make $1 million too.
Well, I told Mac that this morning. Is that wrong?
Yeah. No, it's exactly right. We do get that all the time, and it's not true. Just like John was saying, this is an art form with rules. You got to know how to do a page turn. You have to really, the economy of language is so important, connecting with a performance. I don't think there's any reason to assume that taking care of kids' literary lives is any less of a responsibility or should take any less thought. Like, we don't say that, oh, you know, that guy is just taking care of kids as patients. Pediatricians can be stupid, or yeah. Child psychologists. It's a kid's brain. Like, just have the idiots be child psychologists. But for some reason, people think writing books for kids is simple. But they have complicated emotional and intellectual lives, and it's our job to kind of get in there.
So how do you go about, you just told me a couple of things I'd never heard before, getting into the page turn. What do you mean by that?
So, I mean, one way to look at a picture book is basically, you know, 14 or 15 page turns. And each page turn is an opportunity to surprise, to change the setting, to amplify things in some crazy way.
Like actually where The Really Ugly Duckling, yes. Where Lane put that page turn is a perfect example. You see the little duck, and the intro to the story is he was a little ugly duckling.
And he just looks wacky, tiny in the middle of these ducks.
And
all
then
looking
you turn
him.
The page and it says, and he grew up to be a really ugly duck, and there's a huge picture of him.
And the composition is identical. The ducks arrayed around him, just the duck has increased in size, and everything else is the same.
Now, do you guys do any illustrations with your books?
I actually wrote a book that came out last year called Chloe and the Lion, in which I get frustrated with my illustrator midway through, fire him, and do the pictures
myself.
And
do some very interesting illustrations.
Yeah, so I got my work published, and I think it'll be the last time that ever happens. But it actually is my terrible drawing in the book.
Yeah, because otherwise we're the writers, and we hand it off to our illustrators. Though we work pretty closely with our illustrators.
I was just gonna ask you that question. Yeah. How closely do you work, and how do you make that relationship work?
It's unusual that we get to do that, and we probably shouldn't encourage anybody else because our publishers will hate us.
It's true. Our publishers would rather keep us apart. If I have something I'm going to say to, say, Adam Rex, who illustrates a lot of my stuff, I'm supposed to call my editor, tell her what to tell Adam, and then she calls Adam and tells him whatever she wants to. You know,
well, part of it is to protect the illustrators because they don't want someone looking over their shoulder saying, like, oh, I thought the bunny should have been a little
fuzzier.
They
want their own editorial independence as you do writing your book.
Yes, exactly. But another reason is to kind of get some more control with the editors in terms of the process, which I understand. You know, I think the editors, understandably, want to be the conduit. That's just not necessarily what John and I want.
And working with our illustrator for Battle Bunny was essential that we all go back and forth. We were very closely working with Matt, because we had to have the bunny look so sweet from the beginning and then get all scarred up and have an eye patch later.
I think I read somewhere that the ideas for this book, one of you said that if the idea didn't pop out within 2.5 seconds, it didn't count or something like
that's
that.
That's right. Yeah,
really a stream of consciousness kind of thing.
For the first book, for Birthday Bunny, we wanted to write the most cliched, overdone thing. So everything had to be solved with the first thing that came to our heads. And sometimes that ended up in some weird stuff, too. Too. Like our favorite moment was us just kind of sitting there, and all the animals of the woods are presenting gifts. And I said, John, like, what would a squirrel give a bunny?
And I just said, I think it would be a nut clock.
And we're like, all right, a clock made from nuts. Perfect. Exactly. So
it became our punchline, which is a clock made of nuts. Nut clock.
Yeah. So take me from start to finish in one of your projects, Mac. Like, I mean, you get the idea. I mean, you're rewriting, I imagine.
That's right, yeah.
Again, people will think, oh, you just spit it out in 20 minutes. Uh-uh.
No, not at all. Yeah, you got to get it just right. And with picture books, so often it's about reduction, you know, going back and making it as lean as possible.
Getting rid of words that you don't need.
And even though I don't draw, I do think that, like, writing for picture books is a visual act. I'm imagining kind of opportunities for illustrators to really do impressive things. I think that's my job, is to help illustrators look good on the page.
Do you pass those ideas on through your editor sometimes?
I'll put notes into the manuscript, and then, you know, sometimes secretly talk behind the editor's back too.
But I like the way Mac also leaves opportunities and holes. Like, you write as little as you can. You don't have to describe the color of the clouds or what things look like. You let the illustrator do all that. It kind of frees us up that way.
How did you learn that, John? Like, how did you figure that out?
Probably reading a bazillion books when I was teaching. I taught elementary school for 10 years. And in that same way that Mac told stories to kids, you get the rhythm of picture books of the greats who did it, like Dr. Seuss before us. James Marshall.
Dr. Seuss.
Yeah. Sendak. And is a big the rhythm is exactly right. Sendak was always talking about the musicality of it and the rhythm of it. And it is, because they're almost always performed, you know?
But Dr. Seuss is exactly what the point of this new book is, which is this idea of there was nothing conventional about Dr. Seuss.
Absolutely.
As there's nothing conventional about this book, right?
Yeah, yeah. And we kind of love that people have recognized that. They see it and they go, oh, man, why didn't we think of that? It was like right in front of us, yet it's so weird.
I should point out again that John Sheska and Mac Barnett will talk about Battle Bunny this evening at 6:30 at the Reading Reptile in Brookside, 816-753-0441 for tickets and more information. And it sounds like it's going to be a pretty darn good time.
Party at the Reptile!
There will be cake!
Woo!
Guys, thanks so much for coming in. So
hey,
good to have you.
Thanks for having us.
Great radio guest. So good to have you.
Thanks, Steve.
Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Tomorrow on the show, we'll hear about the worst gigs ever from one music journalist. Plus, we'll have the weekend to-do list, our latest edition of 90 Mile View, and this week's Local Listen. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman, Danny Alexander, Beth Lipoff, and Cody Newell. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.